Hello, my baby bubbaloos. That was definitely a Big Mouth reference. If you are listening and you are liking what you hear, friendly reminder to pop on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify to leave a review and a rating to help get the word out about Zip and Foolish and help me out also realize my dreams, my goals. Okay, let's get into the episode. Hi, you're listening to Zaboomer Foolish. My name is Jay, and it's season 2, episode 3. Let's get into... Okay, I already said that. See if you can guess this week's animal of the week by this little mashup a la Disney Plus meets Tiana Taylor. You ready? Okay.
I will. I'm still here tonight. When you touch me, everybody wants to be a cat. Because a cat's the only cat. The nose was not, and you go deep in the sheets. I will.
Okay, that was a little mashup of Work This Pussy by Tiana Taylor and Everybody Wants to Be a Cat by Thomas O'Malley of the Aristocats. And if that wasn't obvious enough, this week's animal of the week is cats, broadly, very broadly, because I was thinking, I was like, can I focus on just one particular individual species of cat? No, I must include the entire genus, Felis. Kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. Okay, Felis. Yeah, I think it's Felis. Yeah. Call me a scientist every day, except today. I couldn't just choose one. Although for our 626, which we'll get into a little bit later, you will get a little bit more specificity. I do focus on jaguars, but more on that later. I wanted to... Yeah, talk a little bit about cats, just generally, before we hop into the rest of the episode, because if you don't know, I have a cat, and I've been conducting a research project for the city of Vancouver that is estimating the population of cats that live here, and I'm a Leo, okay, so I don't know if you can see a sort of trend here, okay, but cats are very much... part of my life, part of my identity, okay? That feline femininity, fatale. Okay, actually, no, we're going to address that in a second. But, yeah, cats are a big part of my life. And it started off from a very early age, I would say. Oh, I have to be careful. I don't want to be some reverb. You might notice there's some changes in the audio. I'm just in the midst of moving houses, and so there are some things that are packed up and things that are moved away, and also I'm getting new furniture to my office and the faculty, so it's like it's a little bit of a messy boots show behind the scenes right now, but so excuse the crunchy boots. We will be back to higher quality in the future. Anyway, that being said, my journey with cats started from quite a young age. I was born in a year that will remain undisclosed because, you know, the internet is kind of mad, so we won't give you all the details. But let's just say I was born extremely close to the Lion King, the Disney animated version, not this new National Geographic version. But I used to actually take the VHS with me everywhere. Like, I love the movie so much that I wouldn't trust it alone in my house. So I would like bring it with me to like everywhere I went. There's like photos of me with this VHS, like just like dangling out the stroller, like giving you the side eye. It's really, really quite funny. That being said, okay, my love of cats definitely blindsided me to a couple problematic things that cats, well, just a couple problematic aspects about cats and the whole general cat umbrella. First thing being, right, that why is it that we as a society, and I know why, this is a rhetorical question, we as a society attach gender to everything, right? And in this instance, why is it that we hyper-feminize cats and felines and literally that entire genus, wow, they are not a Spotify playlist, this entire genus of animal, right? And it's just like, for me, it's like, okay, I understand there are some threads here and where in the ways in which people treat cats, in the hyper femininity of cats, in the ways in which the media also contributes to this, right? And then also the sort of juxtaposition of that is this hyper masculinity that is attributed or associated with dogs, right? And this sort of like juxtaposition of the two types of owners, but people who have relationships with dogs versus people who have relationships with cats, right? Or who are their quote unquote owners. There's a lot of different sort of, I guess, social assumptions that are made about these kind of two different groups of people. Like if you're a dog person versus a cat person. And again, I think that's kind of hyper, it's tied directly to the patriarchy. It's tied to misogyny. It's tied to the ways in which we vilify femininity, right? And I just think it's absolutely wild that even, like there's nothing untouched by patriarchic delusion. And just this very sinister way in which this more larger grand concept, white supremacist delusion, right? Because patriarchy is just but a branch of this larger tree. And it's just wild that it literally, nothing's untouched. And in this case, not even cats, right? The hyper-femininity we attach to felines is very much problematic and bizarro taro. But something I didn't really start to question until, yeah, more recent years. That being said, another problematic thing that, you know, if you follow me on the IG or on literally anywhere, actually, that my name is Googleable or coming up or whatever, you will have heard probably about this cat project, about me talking about cats, because of this other problematic thing that I found out about cats, which is that they have such a huge impact, right, on urban wildlife, specifically on populations of birds within urban areas. And I was just gaga chandrad when I found out that I was a part of that problem by letting my cat outside unsupervised. I mean, granted, to this day, full disclosure, my cat still is allowed outside unsupervised, but it's much more controlled in the setting that we have it in. I'm not perfect. We're adjusting slowly over time. But again, like I have to consider Kita's welfare as well. My cat's name is Kita. And I can't just abruptly keep him inside and like change the whole nature of the game. So we were doing leash training. We're doing very closed radius sort of area that he can go to unsupervised. If he wants to extend that, he knows he's not allowed. Like there's been a lot of training that's evolved here. Anyway, point of the story is problematic nature of cats is, yeah, they go off in urban areas. And that's like not just happening here in North America, where, I mean, yeah, cats are what, responsible for 150 to 300 million bird deaths annually across the country, right? But it's happening everywhere. Like, cats are found on every continent. Yeah, you heard me right. Even on Antarctica. Yeah, Cats have been going to that continent four times. They have been like, oh, humans, you're going to Antarctica? Okay, bet. We're fucking coming with you. And I think the first cat that had went there, actually, I'm not even going to try and attempt to pull it up. I'll just put it up on the Patreon. I know that the cat's name was Mr. Chippy, and it was like from 1814 or something. A long, long, long time ago, during one of the first expeditions to Antarctica. But yeah, they're found everywhere. And that's, you know, we love them for that reason. Like, every culture, every person somewhere has a relationship or an interaction with cats. And I think that that's super interesting, right? That they're just, like, so widely dispersed and so intimately connected also to, like, human expansion and human development. I think that's really interesting, too. This idea of, like, I don't know, that we both have been collectively, like, growing and developing, but we haven't truly domesticated cats, although you could argue that cats have domesticated humans in some sense. So, anyway, long story short, that's going on another tangent, Randon, and that's not the point of this. We're just doing a little intro-mintro into the episode, which is cats and felines and the large umbrella that is Roar Roar Pussy Pussy Boots. Also, did you know that all cats have retractable claws? I didn't know that. I thought that it was, like, big cats, their claws were, like, always out, and then it was, like, only little Puss in Boots that could retract. But no, apparently all cats can retract. And then when I was doing some more research into this, I found out that it was because they all have this, like, really cool kind of setup in their toes where it's literally, like, they flex this tendon and then they, like, retract the claws. So they're very intentional with when they want to use their claws. So if a cat is scratching you, you know it's because they wanted to scratch you, not accidentally. I think that's really funny. I think it's really funny. They communicate really well. And I also am a little bit gagged by their night vision capacity. Like, tell me how you're sitting in full darkness, right, with these two little mirrors behind your eyes, reflecting the smallest glimmer of light. Again, lol, research, hashtag the scientist. When I was researching for this episode and I was trying to find some, like, figures around how much better cat vision is than human vision, and it's something like it's hard to compare, obviously, because we're not cats and we can't ask them, but when we can simulate their sort of field of view and what they kind of see, especially in the dark, and it's wild. They literally need, like, a sixth of the light that we do to make out, like, way more information in much darker settings, so... Gag for me. Okay, we have talked about cats. We've introduced it. That's the animal of the week. Let's jump into Experiment 66. I am so excited to talk about this week's paper. So it is titled Big Cats in Our Backyards, Persistent of Large Carnivores in a Human-Dominated Landscape in India. And it was written by Vijaya, Morton, John, Jagdish, and Ulas back in 2013. I'm sorry, y'all. I try to give you, you know, some freshy-do, some good, oops, up, straight out of the yesterday kind of moment when it comes to the scientific papers. But I was just, I just really like this paper, and I don't think 2013 is that long ago. I mean, wow, the year after 2012, and that was a gigatron. Why was everyone actually doing the most during 2012? Like, I can't believe that. Wow. Little flashback moment. That was wild. Everyone was really, the world is dying, the sky is falling. And it's like, ugh. No, mama. Although it's funny, a lot of people think that 2012 is the year that, like, the timeline started to go awry. And now if you ask me, I actually think it was the year we clocked the Berenstein Mandela effect drama. But yeah, that's another podcast for another time. That being said, if you're a time traveler and you're listening right now, either from the future or maybe you've traveled back in time to your past and my present, maybe consider going back a little bit further to 2012 and just looking around there, see what happened, and see, yeah, maybe you could change some things, and maybe we wouldn't be in this panna cotta drama that is 2020 and 2021. Okay, wow, very much a tangent. Let's get into 66. And I will start off with the abstract as per usual. I like this abstract because it does a fairly good job of like hooking me in and like getting me interested into the paper. That being said, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of abstracts that like to throw out, you know, a lot of numbers at you, which I don't think that they do, you know, a lot. And okay, let's just read it. Protected areas are extremely important for the long-term viability of biodiversity in a densely populated country like India, where land is a scarce resource. However, protected areas cover only 5% of the land in India, and in the case of large carnivores that range widely, human-used landscapes will function as important habitats required for gene flow to occur between protected areas. So, okay, that's a little bit of a mouthful of a sentence, but I don't really agree with this idea that, like, protected areas are the most, I don't know, like, important conservation tool. Just if you want to know more about that, head over to the Patreon, patreon.com/JohnTakeJ. I have written some articles about the legacies of racism and American imperialism and colonial violence that is the sort of framework and backbone of modern day conservation, particularly protected areas and national parks. But we won't go into that here. I do think they do a little bit of a better job at the end of that kind of sentence when they're like, you know, the areas that we use that aren't, you know, protected areas are going to be important to manage gene flow. And I really hate when scientists do this thing where they'll put in like some sort of scientific jargon when they're trying to communicate something just plainly. And it's like, okay, so all you're saying here is that the areas that humans are currently using that fall outside of protected areas will be important areas because animals will be traveling through them, having babies, establishing territories. And so it will be important in order to allow for genetic diversity to occur because of that movement of individuals between these protected areas and through human use land. I guess, okay, fair. That alleged summary that I just tried to do was not as short as their first sentence. So, you know what? Maybe bite my tongue. Cat got my tongue. Okay, moving forward. So in this study, it continues to read, in this study, we use photographic capture, recapture analysis. I love me a good mark recapture study. Capture, recapture analysis to assess the density of large carnivores in a human-dominated agricultural landscape with a density of more than 300 people per square kilometer. And this was in Western Maharashtra, India. And so it continues by saying that we found evidence of a wide suite of wild carnivores inhabiting a cropland landscape devoid of wilderness and wild herbivore prey. Let me read that again for y'all. They found evidence of a wide suite of wild carnivores inhabiting a cropland landscape devoid, so without, wilderness, I'm assuming that they mean like forests, and wild herbivore prey. So not only do you have a lack of wild vegetation and landscape, but you also don't have prey. But Gegatrandra, you have all these giant carnivores. Excuse me. Now let's get to the meat of the potatoes, which is, furthermore, the large carnivore leopard, Panthera pardus, and actually striped hyena, okay, honorable mention, in this episode, they were found at extremely high densities. There were more than, wow, that's really high. I didn't read that properly the first time, y'all. That's like around 5 adult male leopards per 100 square kilometers. That's a lot. 5 adult leopards in 100 square kilometer range? Y'all, that's a lot. That's a lot. Anyway, so it continues to read, this situation has never been reported before where 10 large carnivores within 100 square kilometer range are sharing space with dense human populations in a completely modified landscape. Human attacks by leopards were rare, despite a potentially volatile situation, considering that the leopards has been involved in serious conflict, including human deaths in adjoining areas. Oh my gosh, this study is really, wow. I told you, I'm excited about it. And if you want to, like, get more into the, you know, the nitty-gritty of, like, their methods and, like, the data that they present, this, as always, you know, it'll be linked over on the Patreon in the extra content for the episode. But there's something particularly that I want to zero in on now for y'all. So the thing that I want to focus on is how similar this study is to the one that I'm conducting here in Vancouver. So I use 35 cameras. They use 40 cameras. I monitored for 8 months. They monitored for a year. And this is why I love science, right? This sort of replicability of research methods that only adds to the confidence of the data that we collect. Come through. Anyway, so what they were able to find, right, was like over this entire time, they were able to get, so 5,000 images, I think, totally, 13 species. Out of that, there were like 81 really high quality images of leopards, six distinct adult males, six distinct adult females, 5 adult males. That's really cool. And then out of the females that they captured, 2 of them were photographed with cubs. Gaga Chandra. And I love this too, because if we go down to the results, we see that the most photographed species was humans. Then it was domestic cats. And then it was leopards. Isn't that so funny? I was looking through the results and I was like, no. You're telling me on a study that was even trying to focus on these larger big cats that domestic cats are out here doing the most, walking around. And I got to thinking, I'm like, I wonder if there is some sort of community between cats of different sizes. That would be a really interesting study to conduct one day. But now I'm getting off topic, because there was also another really interesting point that they brought up in the article, or not the article, this is a scientific research paper. There's another interesting point that they brought up, and I wanted to read it out for you here. It's this part from the discussion section of the paper that kind of tries to talk about why this is happening, right? And before I go into the specifics about why they think this is happening, I just want to zoom out a little bit and have a conversation with y'all here, because this is one of the predicted impacts of climate change, right? Like increased human-wildlife conflict, but particularly, right, that within predators that are going to be encroaching and moving more deeply into our modified rural and urbanized landscapes. And so what's interesting, I think, about this research paper, and in the case of the jaguar or the leopard, here in India, is that India doesn't have the same approach to wildlife management, particularly managing wildlife conflict, that the rest of the world does, right? Which is sort of this like prescriptive death approach. They're just like, we just kill everything that we don't like or causes us a problem. But that's not the case in India. And I'm going to read about it why. So this part of the discussion, right, actually reads, it goes, India's laws make it illegal to kill any wildlife for sport or for consumption. And in the case of large cats, even killing man-eaters requires permission from state authorities. And so I think that's kind of the little crux here of this paper, and the thing that I wanted to bring up, right, is that this sort of national approach to managing wildlife, this no-kill strategy, right, that across the board for all wildlife species, is giving wildlife a chance to travel through and integrate, I guess, faster and more intimately with our modified landscapes. Now, don't get me wrong, there are some problems associated with this, right? Like, there are people who use the land for managing livestock, be that for, like, just chickens or cattle or what have you, right? And not even necessarily for consumption, but for the, like, interspecies sort of benefits that come from having livestock on the land, be it like the restorative aspects that they can bring to soil or the pest control aspects that chickens have when you're growing crops, what have you, right? Those animals are subject to predation by these predators, the jaguar in this case, that are moving through these modified landscapes, these agricultural areas, as they enter these more urbanized spaces. And so I think that this actually highlights something super unique, a very unique opportunity, right? Especially for how we're going to change conservation moving forward, right? Is that we look at the ways in which conflict is unfolding in these transitionary areas between natural landscapes and urban areas. And then we be a little bit more direct in how we prevent and manage these conflicts, right? So how is it that we're actually, I don't like the word training, but it's kind of like, how are we learning to coexist almost with one another, right? And so if we want to create a solution or an environment where we as humans can rear and raise animals in our sort of agriculturally productive areas that these predators will be moving through, how can we do that in a way that doesn't also cause conflict through predation of livestock, right? And that maybe through more connectivities or corridors of pathway that allow for the natural herbivore prey that would be in these more, I guess, like forested areas, right, to actually maybe enter or share these agricultural landscapes with us. And in doing so, it provides these alternative prey and more natural prey solutions for jaguars and for other predators that are entering into our urban spaces. Granted, this is me just like kind of talking off the cuff and just like shooting random solutions into the sky. I would definitely think about this a little bit more critically if anyone were to ever ask me, like, what do you plan to do? But I'm just like thinking here, like, how we can sort of see through this paper and just through jaguars, through cats, right, through our relationship with cats, right, how we can sort of shift and change the relationship between human and animal coexistence, particularly, right, under the lens of reducing conflict. Okay, I think that's, I'm going to wrap that there. I really like where that has ended. And I think we're going to jump right now into what's the sitch. Hi, sorry, this was going to bother me before we go into what's the sitch. I just needed to say, I don't think I touched on how individual leopards were actually like, how do you do that? How do you go about being able to identify individuals through photographs? And so the gag is we actually use the leopard spots. And when we're doing it for house cats, like with my study here in Vancouver, we use different coat patterns. So essentially you just you count the spots, you look at the shapes, you look at the size, you look at the spacing between spots. Generally you focus on, there are a couple ways that you can do this. You can do this by comparing the left side and the right side of animals in the photos. And usually you want to get both sides, that way you don't mistake individuals that show up on the left side versus the right side as two different ones when they're really the same. But you can also focus more specifically on, for example, the tail or the face region if those are really high quality images, because it's a little bit easier to determine or distinguish, I should say, between individual cats, specifically leopards, but also cats more generally, when you have higher quality images of their face and their tail. Generally speaking, there just tends to be a lot more individuality in those parts, be it in the markings or in the actual length of the fur. So that was really bothering me and I just needed to share that with you. Okay, let's get into what's the sitch. So what's the sitch? Now, if you are not on Patreon, you will not maybe be aware of like all of the tumultuous emotional sort of times that I am experiencing kind of right now. It's just a very heavy moment, again, for the Black community, but and for the queer community, and for the queer Black community specifically, it's just like, oh, March, April, May, it's not even May yet. It's just the end of April now. But And if you're listening to this, I'm recording this during the week of Earth Week, right? So following the verdict of Derek Chauvin and the murdering of Micaiah and Adam Toledo. It's just been a very heavy and intense time. And I have kind of like went on Patreon to like write a little piece about that. And again, this podcast isn't, I don't want it there to be this sort of expectation, right? That it's like this perfect prim and proper place. And like there, it's always going to be the same. Like I want this to be, I'm learning and I'm changing and I'm growing right as I'm doing this. And it's like a practice, not only in commitment, but in like, in self-discovery and in learning, right? Through sort of sharing this space together. And yeah, that all that being said, I'm not in the mindset to unpack conflict right now. And so for this week's episode, what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to take a little bit of a moment to exhale, to hold space for like my breath. And so I'm going to do something a little different. I recently just got my spiritual seasoning for the soul deck by Kelechi Okafor. So one of the major inspirations for this podcast slash a lot of the work that I do online, and one of the just most phenomenal sort of content creators and Black femmes that I've ever come across, her name is Kelechi Okafor, and she has a podcast called the Say Your Mind podcast, officially known as Say Your Mind, unofficially known as, well, you're going to have to listen to the podcast if you want to know, but she has produced these amazing deck of cards called the Spiritual Seasoning for the Soul deck. And the cards, they're not dissimilar to tarot in the sense that they are a tool to push and help you with genuine moments of reflection. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be pulling two cards from the Spiritual Seasoning for the Soul deck. One for a sort of reflectionary prompt for myself that I will share in the space, and then another that I want to kind of have for the wider audience, for y'all, specifically for you listening. But before we get into the reading, I wanted to actually just give a quick shout out to you, the listeners. Yeah, I need to take a moment because y'all are so incredibly supportive, especially those of you who are over on the Patreon. And it means a lot that we are able to sort of share this space together, and that you also week after week come to support me and listen to what this nonsense, chaotic brain puts together. And I just really wanted to thank you. I'm extremely appreciative for the love and support that y'all show me, and that you have specifically really kind of ramped up this last sort of month or so. So that has just been incredible. And I also just really wanted to shout out those of you who have sent me your reviews and sent me your wildlife experiences directly to jaunting.j@gmail.com. I am actually going to read out one of the reviews now, because the last week's episode was the one about orcas. I actually have an email from one of the listeners here who I don't think I have permission to say their name on the podcast, so they will just be anonymous, but they have written a really lovely little message. I'm going to read that out to you now. So Anonymous writes in and says, a few weeks back, I saw orcas swimming in the ocean at White Cliff Park in West Van. It was such a beautiful moment, and my heart flutters every time I think about it. Oh, that's so nice. Okay. And then they continue to write, I caught the last little bit on video of the orca swimming away, but when we first saw them, they surfaced enough to see the white markings on their heads. Fun fact, when I was little, I used to think the whole white part of their head was their entire eye. Lol, anybody else? Okay. Honestly, same, same. I used to think the exact, like, that the white parts on, like, the side of their heads, yeah, I definitely thought that was their eye, and it wasn't until way later that I realized, that I found out that their eyes were, like, so small, so much smaller. Lol. Yeah, they have the best sort of eyeshadow and cut crease moment in the animal kingdom, if you ask me, next to some pretty fashionable birds. But this is not an episode about birds. Anyway, they end this little note here that they sent in with going, I hope that one day you release the video of you seeing a moose for the first time. I swear I've released that. Okay, honestly, maybe... sorry, y'all. I'll go ahead and add that to this episode's extra content. So I'll add the moose video. The one, if you don't know the video in question, when I was 16, I saw a moose for my first time. And it was just like a very wild experience because I had like glasses on that were like the 3D glasses with the lenses popped out. And I was like, and I had duct taped the center. And I was like, it was just, and the camera was zoomed in. It was just a mess. And I was just like so gobsmacked by the moose. Anyway, lol, I'll put that video up on the Patreon. I'll also share the little video that they have sent as well about their orca experience. And they end with just a little thank you saying, thank you, Jalen. Boom Foolish makes me so happy. Thank you. Thank you. Honestly, it's honestly messages like that that really like make me excited to like come back to this space and like continue to do this work. Not, I should be clear, I'm not doing this for y'all. Like, this is very much more so a space for me to exist within and like learn and grow, and like the more people that can kind of like get something from that, I love that, and the better for it. That being said, there is something that just really excites me about reading messages like this. And so, yeah, if you have a sec, maybe shoot a review or share a little wildlife experience with jaunting.j@gmail.com. But if not, no worries. Just continue listening, supporting the podcast how you can and where you can. And okay, let's get into the reading. So if you are like... what is this reading nonsense? What's happening? Don't worry. I'm shuffling the cards right now. I'm shuffling the deck, and the cards themselves you'll understand in a second when I actually read them. Again, the first one is sort of a reflective prompt, more so for me that I need to kind of hear in this moment, and the second card will be more so for us as like a collective. That being said, if the words that you hear apply to you and they resonate with you, the message is for you. So, like, listen and take heed and reflect. And I would challenge you to actually just be vulnerable with yourself now, where you can be honest and be critical. Like, don't shy away from how you actually feel and how you respond to the words you're about to hear. Okay, so, let's draw. The deck has been shuffled, and I will be drawing it out now. So, the first card, and the second card. Okay, so the first card I drew, was card number 23, and it reads... When making a decision, consider which option makes your heart smile. Okay, so let's read sort of what the prompt is for 23. There's a little booklet, by the way, that comes with the deck. So if you do manage to get your hands on one of these decks by Kelechi, there it comes with a little booklet. And inside the booklet, number 23 reads, you convince yourself that you simply don't know which way to go, when really you do. You made a choice with your heart and... it is time to honor it. Honestly, I feel like that's something I kind of struggle with. Like, I feel as though things that make my heart happy are not necessarily the things that I should be doing, which is so weird in and of itself, because that's the advice I would never give to someone else. But I guess for me, it's like, I just sit with the reality that, like, not everything can make you happy, and so you can't realistically expect everything to make you happy. But I guess this is more of a reminder to say that just because that in and of itself is true doesn't mean that I also can't choose to, I guess, more specifically select options that make me happy or make decisions that are centered around my heart and how I feel around things. Okay, wow, that's maybe a little bit of a read. I'm just getting like more energy from this sort of card now, and I think the energy it's saying is like, bitch, like, it's not always about thinking with your head. It's not always about like trying to find logic and find reasoning and find like the perfect equation and solution to things. It's like sometimes you do need to lead with the heart. Sometimes you do need to sit discomfortably with emotion and with the uncertainty of that, and just trust that if you're following it in the ways in which makes your heart happy, then your decision or the path or the thing that you're selecting will work out in the end. Oh wow. Okay, that was just the vibes I was getting off the card, and I love that. Okay. The second card, so there's the prompt for us collectively, us as people, us as maybe a society, I don't know. Us, this is the prompt that I was put forward. So it says, breathe in all the blessings, breathe out all the stressings. Ooh, Kelechi. That's a word. Yes, I think that's something we definitely need to hear right now. Breathe in all the blessings, breathe out all the stressings. Yeah. Wow. So that was card number 41. Ooh. And so if I just go to the booklet, I mean, I'm already getting vibes off the card, so I'll speak to that in a second. But if we go off the booklet, right, it says, breathe as a way to remain present. Breathe as a way to release all that keeps you contracted. Breathe as a celebration of your life. And that's the tea in it, honestly. You have to, wow, in it. Now I'm using like British terms. I love Kelechi so much. Anyway, so yeah, this is a whole word. This idea that, okay, just have a moment now. I can pause and breathe and realize that things are still happening that are positive and are benefiting me and can be seen as a blessing. And I can breathe out, and with my exhale, with this sort of decompression, we should focus on releasing this stress that we have, either the stress that we hold when it comes to our anxieties and our worries about tomorrow, about things that we could have changed in the past, about what we're experiencing. I mean, more specifically, us within the Black community. And if you're not Black, then you're not particularly experiencing this right now. But yeah, wow. This sort of is, that's a really timely prompt. Breathe in, breathe out. And that's it. That's it for this week. And I'll catch y'all next week for episode 4. Exciting, because next week's episode is the first interview. Yes. Remember season 2, we are going to be featuring interviews from Indigenous and Black and queer academics up in the scientific world. So super excited to share that interview with y'all next week. A little bit more about that, I'll drop a little bit more about that over on the Patreon. Yeah, and as always, if you want, go ahead, check out the Patreon, patreon.com/jauntingj. Or, you know, just head over to Instagram. You can find out all the kind of free, regular, day-to-day content there at jaunting.j. And, yeah, stay fresh. Land on your feet. I hope you found fun feline fenergy in this cat episode. And I'll catch y'all next week. Bye.
Peru.